Tight-beato, a happy place where kittens bloom and flowers play. People get a decent say at what goes on when we let you slate.
And you're on The Postman Show, care of The Vinnie Eastwood Show, or www.thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And today's guests are Alana Freiland, who's an expert on the subject of harp and chemtrails. And we'll go into a little bit of background in a second. Back to Alana, we'll flush this out. And we've also got Billy Hayes, who has actually worked on the construction of the original harp facility in Alaska. And he'll be joining us, as Alana's writing a book about it, he'll be joining us and providing a little bit of input throughout the show. Good morning, Alana. How are you doing there?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Excellent. And Billy's there. He's just on mute at the moment. Billy, thank you for being on the show as well. I'm just going to explain, before we get into your background, Alana, the reason why we're doing the show today is before November the 8th, which is when we had the TPPA protests throughout New Zealand, I started to notice that there was some unique seismic activity going on around basically the Bay of Plenty. And then when I, during the lead up to that, the protest weekend, I also noticed that there was a large raft of basically whale strandings that also occurred off the coast of Bay of Plenty. This is an event which we have seen occur in all three Christchurch earthquakes, plus a 6.4 magnitude earthquake that happened in Wellington around about January of last year. In fact, pretty much every single seismic event which has the signatures of HAARP has been marked by this, from the Indonesian earthquake in 2004, Haiti, Japan, have all had these strandings. So that was one of the things that grabbed my attention. I started looking at this area, and then what I turned around and did was I came back from the protest, and I noticed that we also had a large deployment of US Marines on our soil, which again is one of the things that we've noticed in all these events, and it just happens to be that they're having the Pacific exercises, or there's a military presence in these areas at the same time. I also noticed at the same time that the area in question was actually up for seismic surveying for oil. And then the two biggest signatures that I noticed in the area was a raft of mass reportings of sonic booms and fireballs that were occurring in that Pacific region and building up. One of the things I noted during the week was I also noticed that the audio component wasn't as large as I initially anticipated, but I commented on the fact that while some of the days were quite quiet here, on the opposite side of the globe, in Houston and Virginia and Pennsylvania, we were seeing extremely intense waves. And what I've basically done is I'm bringing these guests on today because they've got a bit of technical background into this area, and I want to kind of take through each of these steps and see what they think. And, of course, the last thing that I also notice, and we've actually, during the community in New Zealand's been fantastic, is and in fact even Australia, is that we've seen a large wave of basically chemtrail spraying in these Pacific areas. Now, one of the things I want to point out is, aside from some of the things we've been, for example, seeing these large clouds that have these big rainbow colours through them, they make the comment these are very, very rare, but I think we saw three in 1 week. In fact, when you went and looked at places like Nelson, Mochuaca, Northern, people were picking up smaller versions of these all throughout that week. So it was very, very, very intense spraying. Now, the other thing which was happening from the activist scene in New Zealand, which was, you know, like big thumbs up, guys, is that, number one, people were collecting chemical samples. In Hamilton, they collected and noticed that there was high levels of barium in the soil where there was no particular reason for that to be present in that material. And people were also noticing that what was happening was on some of these airplanes which were being connected to the chemtrails was that they were spraying, the aircraft were being picked up on radar, but they didn't have any registered flight path. In other words, these were airplanes that shouldn't have actually been in the sky. And this was documented, noted, people noted the airplanes. Superb activism work throughout New Zealand, so all a big pat on the back, because without you guys, I can't do this work. You know, you're my eyes and ears out there, so there's about six different sites I go to, and the people have been really getting into understanding the need for hard evidence and great photographic material. So that's what we've actually been having. And on that note, Alana, maybe just before we get into this different background, maybe you'd like to explain a little bit about your background and Billy's background as well, please.
Well, yeah, Sid, I mean, your description of your situation down there is just loaded with things that I've written about in my book, Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, put out by Feral House Press just this last June. My background is biology, not physics, but I have a master's in historiography, and so I wrote this book basically through doing a tremendous amount of research, rereading the old books that have been written on HAARP, and then the few books written on chemtrails. And what I've done is tried to show how the two work together, and I call them the HAARP chemtrails pump and dump system. And what we're looking at here is, well, before I go into it, let me give Billy's background. Billy's background, he heard me on Coast to Coast in May, and ever since we've been fast friends, because Billy has the hardware experience that I lack. He has worked on over 250 projects for various military industrial corporations who have connections to various three-letter agencies in the U.S. government. So we're a good match.
Can I understand why. Can I just stop you? Just one point of clarification I need is that because of the nature of the work that Billy's been doing, a lot of it's classified. It's very hard for him to say who he's actually worked for. As a researcher, you have seen him provide first-hand primary documents and material that satisfy you that he is who he says he is?
The documents that what? I didn't hear you.
Basically, has Billy provided you with source material that is able to corroborate that he is who he says he is? Because that's one of the things which, you know, that we just need to clarify that point.
Well, I wouldn't say source material. I would say that he's been on the ground working on the devices, certainly the HAARP towers up in Gakona, Alaska. He was one of the people up on those towers. Yeah. In fact, reasons he has health problems now is because he has been working on those all his life. The documentation, truthfully, it's all an open source. Everything is on the net. All military documents. I have over 600 footnotes in the book.
I appreciate that, Alana, but one of the things we need, you know, when I listen to Billy talking in interviews, it's clear that he has a good technical understanding of what he's saying, but from your viewpoint, in the time that you've dealt with him, has he provided you with material that satisfies you that he is who he says he is? Because that's one of the things we need to clarify.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I am in no doubt whatsoever. This is not my first contact with someone who's worked in that field. I'm absolutely certain. In fact, if you go to, I constantly go to Billy's site and pull more because I'm getting ready to write the next book, which is even more crucial than this one. But what you're experiencing down in Australia and New Zealand completely has to do with, yes, big oil is down there on your coast. Yes, the U.S. military is there.
Let's go for let's go for each of those different forensic signatures, and there's a couple that I've just realized I haven't mentioned. But let's start off with the first one. One of the things I've noticed in all of these events, and I also, you know, this is not the first time I've turned around and said, this event's going to happen here, and I've been correct. I also called the Boxing Day earthquake. The front page of that, there was actually a fireball on the front page of the newspaper, and I was online saying, hey, guys, you know what's going to happen next. But with the whales, why do you believe that whales and dolphins respond in the way that they do just before this weapon is unleashed?
Well, are you talking about the fact that it's a sonar event and they're highly sensitized to it?
So you believe it's the inner ear, the whales are naturally sensitive to EMP disturbances, so that's one of the reasons that they are getting confused and stranding?
Yes, it would absolutely be. Because if you were present for, say you were off the coast of Africa and a U.S. Navy destroyer approached, and it had an LRAD on board, which is a sonar weapon, and you felt that sonar weapon hit you, you would be blasted back hundreds of yards. And when you figure that the water is the primary medium for the cetaceans, of course they're going to respond in a way of how in the hell can I get out of here? Oh, yeah.
Totally. And again, two of the things which I mentioned is that we've got to go to is the other thing that we noticed was a raft of basically chemtrails spraying occurring just before the event occurred. We also noticed that I noticed that solar activity always seems to be at a peak when this event occurs. The patterns which they are flying in for the chemtrails seem to be flying in an antenna that's either like a clothesline formation or a crisscross pattern. Again, you know, one of the things a lot of time people turn around in the past and they get in this, like, you know, everything's a chemtrail. I don't believe everything is a chemtrail, but in these cases, what we're seeing is we're picking things up on radar, we're taking soil samples, which confirm in these cases, this is not normal flying, and what they're spraying is not normal contrail. We've got radar, soil samplings, all of these things. So why do you think, again, why do you believe that the use of chemtrails and solar flare activity being high, how does that tie in?
Well, the solar flare activity is sort of like they're trying to catch the big wave coming in, the magnetic wave coming in. So what they need, they can use that. They can use that for their technology. They can't yet create a solar wave, of course, but they wait for those and they ride them in. And the reason for the chemtrail activity is they're laying heavy-duty metal chaff. And you said right, it's strontium, barium, and aluminum are usually used because they're highly conductive. And then that highly conductive curtain of chaff can then be hit with lasers from radar installations, from oil rigs, from ships, from onshore. You've got several U.S. military installations down there. So they need that if they're going to move a weather system or they're going to create a weather system. They've got to have that chaff curtain. They can actually literally create a wall with that chaff, and then that will produce a highly conductive tunnel effect, by which they can shoot the laser through that tunnel and create a weather system on the other side of the Earth. Like, I thought you said something about you were getting red readings or pink readings from as far away as Pennsylvania in the United States. Well, did you say that?
Well, what I was noticing was that you were seeing it like a rubber or like a ping pong effect, which is you have some days where the activity of sonic booms and fireballs in the sky was very, very low. But in those days, if you went to the other end of the planet, those areas were very, very intense. So it seemed to be that there's a sort of like a seesaw effect, pattern going on, that when we're low, the other planet's high, and when we're high, they're low. I think Colonel Tom Baird writes about this, where they basically bombard the system and wind it like a rubber band and then let it go. So they'll start in one area, in that area, build it up, and then just release it like a sharp rubber band.
Yes, that's a good metaphor for it. But you realize you're working with ground waves. I mean, primarily this system of HAARP, and when I say HAARP, I'm just using the acronym because
exactly,
we don't have another acronym to fill in. That installation has been surmounted by much more powerful installations that are now mobile. They're all over the earth.
Yeah.
So when it does that, though, when it fires up to a pink, you're talking about ground waves, ELFs, extremely low frequency, long, long waves that can actually surround the earth. And these are going straight through the earth. So that's part of what you're not getting, and it is very hard to get it. It's called scalar interferometry using.
What I understood from my understanding is that I treat effectively HAARP like, and again, I'm using HAARP in the metaphorical sense, I treat it very much like basically a giant microwave oven. And, you know, to me, it's actually, it's when they send the signals up into the upper stratosphere, and this is why I wonder about the solar flare activity, is that I know that there's a lot of these very large plasma storms occur in the high stratospheric area. They've got names like Blue Jets and Sprites. I know that the Hubble, the space shuttle, uses a multi-spectrum system that basically allows them to track these storms. And, of course, when you have these high solar flare activity, these storms are basically at a peaking level. We have a gentleman down here at Otago University, New Zealand, Dr. Craig Rogers. He used a ground-based multi-spectrum, and when he was doing work in Australia, he was commissioned by NASA to find out what happens when you fly a shuttle through one of these storms. He was noticing that there was a direct correlation between U.S. ground stations tied up with electronic warfare and these storms in the sky. So, you know, again, what I'm wondering about is, you know, the way I see it is that they are ionizing the ground stations, that signal has been redirected up in the stratosphere with these naturally plasma storms occurring, and that energy itself, that's what's being redirected into the ground itself. Am I yes. You know, having spoken to weapons engineers, does that go along with your understanding?
Yes, yes, and that is exactly what I mean by scalar technology. And the guy to read on that, besides Whitaker, who has been sort of struck from science because all this went deep black, we call it in the U.S., it went underground a long time ago in the 30s. But Whitaker, this is all, he's the guy to read. Tesla, of course, was working with ground waves, scalar stuff. And that's sort of what we have to wrap our head around now, is that the oil rigs are also part of this. Yeah. They're actually connected with the technology that's going on. That's the important thing. Whenever I hear about how you have all those oil rigs down there, I know why they're there, and it isn't just oil.
Trust me. We have. Everywhere I've turned around and looked at these cases, which I believe show this. See, my background is I was in the territorials, what you would call the National Reserve, for 6 years. And one of my jobs was I worked in what they call artillery intelligence. And I always say it doesn't matter whether it's a pea shooter or an atom bomb. Every weapon has a forensic signature. So what I'm looking at from my background is when someone's shooting at you, what are the common denominators every time this weapon is brought out to play? And I see not only the same forensic signatures in terms of these fireballs, sonic booms, I see the same hardware, I see the same money trail, I see the same, you know, it's not just the same noises, we're seeing the same people.
The same players.
And oil is, you know, 99% of the time when I look at something that I think is heart, if it isn't about that they're wanting to draw for oil and mineral in that area, it's because they want to keep that oil in the ground or they want that area. Like Japan, like, you know, what happened in Japan completely upset the use of nuclear industry. So now Japan is having to buy lots and lots of oil, which is doing great things for oil prices.
Yes. Yeah, you've got it all right. In the book, I go into Christchurch, what happened in Christchurch. And really, you know, the purpose of this book was not the fine detailing of the science, because except for chapter 2, where I go into Bernard Eastland's patent for HARP and show how it's using cyclotron resonance. And cyclotron resonance is what we're talking about also. It has to do with the ground waves, but it also has to do with what it does to the people and the biological life forms here on the planet. We're all subject to cyclotron resonance.
I'll just back you up a second, because I want to go back a wee bit to Tesla, because one of the reasons why how I came involved in my own HARP research was my background is also predominantly actually in terrorism, history of Middle Eastern European terrorism. But I started looking at the cult Sharenko when I was in Australia in 1995, because one of the things that got my attention was it turned out that Christine Shamrock, the MP for Western Australia Green Party, in 1993 in Parliament, turned around and questioned the Minister of Immigration, Nick Balkas, about why all these Japanese people had been, you know, they'd come into Australia, they had all the strange technology, they were trying to hide chemicals in shampoo bottles, and nothing happened to them. And she turned around and said, you know, what's the deal going on here? And Nick Balkas turned around and said, I think you've been mistaken, but, you know, I'll look into it and report back to you. And we never heard anything again until the cult Sharenko carried out the attack in Tokyo using sarin gas. But it turned out that they had set up a farm in 35 kilometres west of Laverton Royal Australian Air Force Electronic Weapons Station. They set up 35 days before May 28, when Perth got woken up by one of these fireballs that went off over the city of Perth in the wee hours of the morning. It was the equivalent of over 100 Hiroshimas at a high altitude, woke up the entire city at the same time that an earthquake occurred. And Harry Mason, who just did a very good article out there called Bright Skies, traced the epicenter of these events to their ranch. What transpired, because they subsequently had a Senate investigation in both Australia and in the United States of America, was that the reason why nothing happened to the coal was that they were being put under surveillance by the Australian Federal Police. All of their material was provided in these investigations. It was their job sheets that provided the material. All the witnessing reports of the weeks lead up beforehand that truck drivers were seeing these fireballs and hearing sonic booms in this area. Basically, what the Australian Federal Police document said was that they were aware that these guys had been buying black market equipment off the Soviets and that they'd spent a lot of time investigating Tesla's technology. So, from May 1993, we have government investigations confirming that they were researching this type of warfare as a possibility. Sam Nunn, who was the senator for the Arms Intelligence Committee and has been for a long time, both those inquiries were inconclusive, but Sam Nunn then chaired a symposium on weapons of mass destruction at Georgetown University in 1998. The keynote speaker for that is William Cohen, the Secretary of Defense. He is on record, and his speech is a matter of transcript, is saying this technology exists. So the question I say to you is, when people turn around and out there and say, oh, it can't happen, who do you think I should listen to? The Secretary of the United States of Defense or armchair keyboard warriors?
Oh, and your background on Mason's, I read his article in Nexus magazine where he goes into Shinriko and what happened in Australia. That was actually one of the first articles I read that got my attention to really go deeper into this technology.
Exactly.
So, no, this technology has been worked on for over 50 years. They have wanted to get the ionospheric energy in order to weaponize it ever since Tesla had Wardenclyffe on Long Island, and we had that Tunguska event happen, a huge explosion up in the Arctic Circle in Siberia back in 13. So, no, this is very, very long. This is very long term. But the one thing you haven't mentioned that I do want to put in is I understand now how they have ionized the atmosphere. The very atmosphere that we're breathing, it has been fully ionized, and that's another reason for the chemtrails. It's not just to move weather systems.
Yeah.
It's also to keep the atmosphere ionized for all of these communications, I suppose you'd call them, communications weapon systems, because there are so many going on. There are 7 agendas that I've detailed in the book in order to understand how many things they have going, and they've got to keep it weaponized. They've weaponized our atmosphere. We are breathing it. We are breathing the barium, the strontium, the aluminum polymers. We're breathing biological experimentation, genetic experiments, nanoscale.
I just want to back you up again, go back to the ionization aspect of it, because you just reminded me of something. Because there's a gentleman out there. Can you hear me okay?
I'm here.
Yes, I hear you fine. I think Billy's back, isn't he?
Okay. Hey, Billy, we'll bring you on in a second too. There was a gentleman out there that broke a story about Operation Cloverleaf. Now, what struck me, and I looked at this in about, give or take, about 2005, there was a lot of material out there at that time on Operation Cloverleaf, which showed this ionization of the whole planet. Good source material. When you go online and you look today and you go type up Operation Cloverleaf, there's nothing there. It's tied down in the bottom of some article that's maybe not that well researched. And again, I see this, when I went on air, I think it was about 2010, and I on Vinny's show, I made reference to one of the things I look for is this repeated signal of fireballs and sonic booms. And this used to be something I could type into the news channels and it would be a keyword search that I would look for. Now I find that I have to go to very specialist sites to monitor what's happening in the sky. Do you have a viewpoint about what's happening there?
Yes, I think you should read Dr. Rosalie Bertel's book. She died 2 years ago. She was an epidemiologist and a nun, actually.
Yeah.
And she writes about cloverleaf, and I write about cloverleaf. I think you could probably read Jerry Smith's books on weather warfare and HAARP, and I don't know if Nick Begich mentions cloverleaf in Angels Don't Play This Harp. That's pretty dated now, but it's still very good.
Cloverleaf is a good example because the fact that this was all based on declassified material, and it's pretty much, you read that material and you can chuck the word theory out the window because that pretty much highlights that this was a policy that the U.S. military is doing specifically for signals intelligence. And again, I've got a couple of good sources from my background. Military people I talk to say, yep, no worries, HAARP exists. Yes, they do this. They have problems believing that it causes a seismic earthquake, but from their own first-hand usage of it, they accept that this is how HAARP works. It goes from pole to pole. They use this spray material to basically counter propagation so that it has a strong signal. It just seems to be nobody in media land actually wants to look at the hard data.
Well, and I think that they're waiting for some big expert in the corporate-run media to come out and verify. And we simply can't do that. The ones who have been whistleblowers have either died or their families are dying. So we really are on our own in this. And there's plenty of material. I think it's just that people don't want to take the time. They just want a pronouncement by somebody important. And we've got to get over that. That's over.
Oh, totally.
This, to me, that's the beauty of this. If there's a beauty in this curse of a situation of geoengineering, it's that we have to really get serious and start thinking again and turn the bloody TV off.
Well, we do. And one of the things which is really encouraging that's happening here in New Zealand is that, one of my frustrations about chemtrails in the past was that a lot of groups out there weren't going out there and doing the groundwork, investigating the material, and they're kind of like expecting me to do it all for them for the entire country. And I'm like any freelance journalist running off the smell of an oily rag. Well, now what we're starting to see is we're seeing people out going out there independently. They're collecting soil samples. They're working as networks so that they're keeping each other informed when an airplane occurs, so they're tracking on radar systems. They're starting to get really good at using hardcore data to confirm what they suspect. And this is what's always been missing from this particular field until recently.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a matter of retroengineering what is already known. I think one of the greatest examples of that, and bless his heart for doing it, is the independent scientist Clifford Carnicum, who has since the early 90s been collecting data on everything that's dropping from the chemtrails, because they are not just for the weather systems. I have to stress that. Yeah. They are delivery systems for all sorts of things. And some people even think that humanity is under a dire assault as a eugenics sort of thing. I don't know about that, but I do know they're using human bodies and animal bodies as petri dishes for all sorts of terrible genetic and biological experiments of nano creatures that we've all imbibed one way or another. So, I wouldn't even listen to the people who are saying to you, oh, it can't exist. I mean, that's sheer ignorance. Sheer ignorance.
Well, totally. But,
or laziness.
Again, when you talk about the nano side of it, too, is that probably from about the late 80s onwards was when we started to see very active chemtrail spraying in New Zealand. Kaikoura, which is not that far away from the Waiopa signal station, has been an area which has been very active. The mayor there at the time, Kevin Hayes, on behalf of they were so concerned, the mayor of Kaikoura wrote to the Minister of Conservation, Nick Smith, saying, hey, man, look, what's going on? Nick Smith turned around and said to him, I said, oh, they're spraying agricultural stuff, which Kevin Hayes turned around and said, well, they don't tend to spray off the coast of the water for agricultural material. And by the way, here's the UK parliamentary report on the need for regulation of geoengineering. Since you guys aren't up to speed, why don't you read this? And next time, can the actual minister, not his flunkies, answer me? To which the Minister of Conservation turned around and chose not to reply to an elected official. I mean, it's amazing. It's when you get people like that stature calling people to account, and then they turn around, their response is, I don't want to answer your question. You're onto something.
Oh, yes, and I would call it blackmail. I would call it absolute blackmail. And God knows what kind of photographs they have of these people who are in. That's why we can't wait for the experts or the congressional people to say what is going on. They're in fear for their lives, as far as I can see.
And you know, one of the things I was just going to quickly say about that point about Kakura is that from that point onwards, we started to see a raft of such, for example, mass seal dying. And throughout South Island, you see these massive of penguins, different animals. The biologists never have a problem identifying what the virus is. What they can never work out is how the pathogen mutated the way it is. And interestingly enough is when you start to look at the hard science behind the side effects use of nanotechnology, which is, again, very core part of that whole oil industry, this is exactly what the scientists are saying the side effects are. So we see the same symptoms, and the chemtrail activists saying this is what's going to occur 20 years before science caught up with them. So the reality is everything that the chemtrail activists have been saying well in advance has actually been largely vindicated, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that conspiracy theorist and tinfoil hat nonsense is so old. I just skip over it. And even here, it's just not, it doesn't have the power punch it had. Most people are now waking up. It's just a matter of organizing in some way. I think that's what we're lacking here in the States. In Europe, they've been much better organized. They've had 5 conferences at least on chemtrails. And even though the European Parliament seems to waffle this way and that, they have been heard, and they are much more organized over there.
Well, it's the European Parliament. The 1998 report actually classifies HAARP as a climate weather. I mean, it's, again, throw the theory out, because there you have a parliament saying this is a weapon, saying we invited all the Euroscientists to come along and answer our questions, and they chose not to turn up. Billy, since you're there, maybe we can just highlight a little bit about your background, and maybe you might have something you want to input into this?
Well, first of all, I'm going to ask you something. Please do not make me stop. Do not make me back up, and do not interfere with me when I talk. You're cutting her out, and you're cutting... we're not here to talk about you. You ask us to come here and talk about what
Fair
we
enough.
Know.
Go ahead, Billy.
Okay. Number one. One of the things I was involved with was the testing of Agent Orange at Eglin Air Force Base, which was not called Agent Orange at that time. It was called one of the Rainbow Agents. And as a Rainbow Agent, each colored device did a different incisive job for what they needed. Some were herbicides. Some of them were water repellent conditioners. Some of them, you take all the colors of the rainbow, and each one fits in that category. Look that up someday. That was in the 60s, early 60s. That was for that part of it. But that, even that goes back even further. The British were experimenting with the same content that was used in Agent Orange and these herbicides, which showed up in Operation Cloverleaf, clear back during World War II. Clear back in World War II, they castricized the whole east coast of the English Channel on the England side with these herbicides and these water repellents, trying to devise weather, make instant fog. So it's not something.
Yeah, and I even have pictures, photographs from World War I to 1925 showing other chemical experiments, aerial chemical experiments. And, the entire World War I was an aerial chemical experiment as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Now, as for my expertise, I assisted in the, and I'm having a seizure, that's why I'm not able to top properly and pay. And my seizures are related directly to the frequencies that I worked with during my early days. I was compartmentalized by a military system where I was never a civilian until the last 15, 20 years. When I got away from them through the utilization of the lady that I married a couple years ago. I lived with her for 15, 20 years. And she pulled me away from that business. But to go on, I started with HAARP as C-6 at Eglin Air Force Base in 1962 under the control of my father. I had no idea what it was. I got in trouble. They sent me to a school for boys at Marianna, Florida, which is now called the White House. And we are now called the White House Boys because people, we were under the profiling of MK Ultra.
Yep. And no, sorry, but you go ahead, Billy.
Billy, are you there?
Yeah, he interrupted me.
Yeah, it's
sorry,
okay.
Billy, I just wanted to highlight MKUltra because for a lot of people, they don't know what that actually is. And all I wanted to just simply highlight was they had a U.S. Senate investigation, and this was identified more than 375 organizations. So, again, people, you know, go out there and have a look at it because this is historically an event that did occur. Just carry on, Billy.
Yeah.
Okay. My involvement with that is what controlled the rest of my life up until the last few years. You've heard of the name Kathy O'Brien.
Yeah.
And I lived with Kathy O'Brien in Pensacola, Florida. And we had a child together. And I have never met the child. But her handler at that time and my handler was Mark Phillips, who is now her deprogrammer. You understand?
Billy, I just want to bring you back onto HAARP because the reason why we did have you on the show is we wanted to talk about the signatures of HAARP, and I kind of want to stay on that subject if we can.
Okay, well, you wanted my background. Now you're re-experiencing it. You want a proof of my background or not?
No, that's not the issue, Billy. It's just we're trying to look at the...
Then you should have started out that way instead of trying to shoot me down. You're trying to shoot her down, and I'm getting real ticked off at you. Quit
that's
interrupting.
Right.
I know you think you're the boss. You know everything about it.
Billy, at the end of the day,
he's got a time frame, Billy. But I think what Billy's saying is he was in deep with those people that have so many have done it. And now, Billy, let's go to the space fence. Let's just give a vision of where the HAARP tech is going next. That's the important thing.
Okay, please.
Where are we going next?
Okay, as most people know, the heart of HAARP has been put on hold. Gacona HAARP, which is the master power station, was the master power station of the HAARPing system, has been put to rest and is in modification. During that period of time, they had started utilizing mobile units to get closer to the polar regions, such as Operation Deep Freeze in the Antarctic. If you all remember, there was a ship that got stuck in the ice out there, and China and the Russians had to go pull Americans and everybody out of harm's way.
Yep.
That was just this year. That was part of this new HAARPing system, and it's no longer HAARP. It is the space fence. If you notice, they took down the space fence and HAARP Gacona at the same time. They turned around a month later and came back and said, we're giving this contract to Lockheed for, what was it, $854 million to modify the new space fence. The space fence is utilizing the new HAARP technology. The new HAARP technology is a digital technology. And this emphasizes not only what HAARP was before, at lower power, at higher frequencies, but entertains all worldwide communications and in a surveillance system. It also monitors all outer space items that are moving, such as asteroids, space junk, everything that's out there. They've got an eye on it. They've got a number put on it, a digital number on it. Every car that moves that has a digital reference to it, everything on this earth that has a digital reference to it is being recorded through this new space fence.
Yep.
And this that has to do with the ionized atmosphere and keeping the atmosphere ionized, keeping it primed.
Right. And the priming of this is done by ionizing the atmosphere as we know it, but they have also been launching rockets, sounding rockets, into the outer realm of our atmosphere, coating the outer atmosphere, trying to make a Band-Aid for all the damage they've done with HAARP to the ionosphere. And they're utilizing this in a band around the equatorial system instead of just on the polar regions. The reason they're trying to set up on the polar regions is because it can get a direct shot anywhere in the world off a band that goes around the equator.
Go ahead, Lana.
Yeah, I want to make sure Billy says something about why Australia is being hit so heavy down there. I mean, I'm looking at chemtrail pictures on the contrail that Rose sends me, and the atmosphere is just loaded down there, and that is not true for everywhere here. Billy, what is it about Australia and New Zealand that is so special for them to work on and ionize so much? And earthquakes.
I keep on losing you guys.
Oh, did you hear my question?
Nope, it cut out.
Okay, well, why Australia? What is it about Australia? Is it Operation Deep Freeze that they have, that they're activating and doing so much down there, and now these earthquakes? What do you think?
I think it's a pre-set up of the new space fence. They're trying to organize everything for the new space fence with the issues that are going on in the Middle East. They're having to set up this on the pretense of it's an emergency. I mean, and they are trying to get that area covered into Iran, Iraq, Syria. They're trying to cover that area because, remember, the woodpecker, portions of the woodpecker were in Croatia. I can't even say it.
The Croatia,
It was set up in Croatia. I can't say it. I'm having that.
Yeah, that's okay.
What Billy has said about Antarctica, I'm very interested about, because one of the areas I've looked at is you have the base that the Chinese put in Grove Mountain. Now, virtually as soon as it, which they set up for monitoring seismic activity, which if you know anything about Antarctica, Antarctica doesn't get earthquakes. As soon as they set it up, the Washington Post ran an article because they were complaining that the Chinese were using this to spy on the Americans' new base, which is set up directly on the South Pole. It's called Scott Amundsen. It has $500 million worth of communication equipment, which is linked up for a satellite called F2, which relays via the Marisat GO system into Pennsylvania University. So what I'm saying in short is everything that Billy has just turned around and said, I can actually corroborate that from my own research. Deep Freeze, before me was Owen Wilkes, a fantastic researcher, wrote a book called Protest in 1973. He talks about New Zealand's involvement in this geo-warfare research back then. So everything you're saying, Billy, I totally can corroborate.
Yeah. Right. Well, it was up until this year, there was only 34, maybe 44 people involved with Operation Deep Freeze. This last year, they flew in 584 people into the Antarctic. And most of them were employed by Raytheon, Lockheed, and U.S. military.
Alana, have you ever heard of a guy called Dr. Mark Turns? I don't have my notes on my but last 3 years ago, they had a guy that was he was the first homicide that occurred in Antarctica. I spoke to the detective who handled the case. What was interesting was this guy was a specialist in remote-controlled observatories, and everything that I looked at came back to these observatories, which, again, had the strong HAARP connection.
Right. They were all.
So I'm very interested in what you're saying, Billy, because there has been a noted buildup of military presence in Antarctica, which, of course, under the Antarctic Treaty, should actually be outlawed. Raytheon has no business being there under international law.
Exactly. And they also brought in something like 74 barges full of tower equipment that were pushed around to the other side of Antarctica where they dislodged it, and they made bridges out of the barges that were left there.
So were these contractors contracted to spy war, space and warfare? Was that because that's an anachronism I see come up a lot, and all these people, there were three people died. They had very similar symptoms in Antarctica, give or take around about 2000. And they all were linked to this spy war, this U.S. Navy space and warfare program.
Right, and they were all three of them were attached with Virginia Tech. All three of them were attached with Virginia Tech, which is the Super Darn system.
Yeah, This now, is what you, I say, Billy. You know, it's from, these, from a...
Now, you have to understand, the new harping system entails all these, SATCOM, RATCOM, the old DO line, Super Darn. All these systems are all part of the new space fence.
And he said something about Star Wars, and you're thinking of the Strategic Defense Initiative of the Reagan-Cheney Troika,
yeah.
And that is very much, this is the fulfillment of it, and this is where the harping system is going, the space fence. The space fence is the apotheosis of that Star Wars defense system, yes.
And considering, and the old Omega system, which is on Australia, which is still there, you can hit my Facebook, Billy Hayes 67548, and you can, I've been putting it all there as much as I can. And it disappears by the day, by the way.
I
know that feeling. The Omega, again, is what Owen Wilkes wrote a lot about, and that was where the New Zealand came into this research. And what he noted in his book was that a lot of money was being spent in New Zealand, Australian civilian organizations that was actually sourced back to the military. And everything was compartmentalized so that no agency would know what its military applications were. And I even know guys down, I have access to the base down in South, and I said, come on in, you know, this has got nothing to do with military. And I'm going, well, look at the hardware, look who built it, and look who provided you the money.
And yes, Echelon.
Right, and it's the same here. It's compartmentalized here, too. One scientist doesn't know what the other one's doing, and certainly doesn't know what it's all going toward of his own work. Yeah, that's typical.
That's the way it was with in constructing a HAARP. None of us spoke to each other about what was going on. It was not allowed. We were so compartmentalized that there was no discussions.
What I like about you, Billy, is that everything you were saying in terms of the dates that you're talking about and the organizations and what they're doing, you know, it doesn't matter what people, whether they choose to believe what your background is, this stuff you can corroborate and back up in public source information.
I wish I could.
Well, no, a lot of what you were talking about can be. It's like as soon as you start saying these things, I think about a dozen different books or different articles that I've written that all back up what you're saying.
Well, one of the people that I worked with the first HAARP, which was HAARP.
Yeah.
And his name was Gerald Bull. And you might remember him as the man with the super gun. And I had the invitation to meet him in Amsterdam to work with him. And before I could go there, my wife had talked me out of going. And 2 days later, he was assassinated because he was building the gun for Saddam Hussein, the big gun.
Yeah, I know the case very, very well, and we see this repeatedly. Yeah.
Gerald Bull was into Operation Starfish also, which was the detonation of nuclear devices in the atmosphere to ring the magnetosphere. This is what people don't understand. The ideal was to ring the magnetosphere like
for
a bell.
For what function?
To utilize
like a bell. Ring it like a bell.
Ring the bell. Just like music. An endless tone where this would perpetuate perpetual ringing, continuous through one phase of magnetosphere up through the other phase in a circular circle around the Earth.
For what function?
As a future reference as a weapon. This was clear back in the 50s, my friend. This was the first production of HAARP. When they did the first testing of it from the Aleutian Islands, which was in 1963, Gerald Bull went up there and set up his thing up there. My dad was up there with them. And they fired this weapon some 74 miles into the atmosphere to ring it. A big gun with an atomic device on it that detonated. And they were going to make readings with it with electronics all through the Aleutians and up through Anchorage and into Alaska. It was that same day that happened that the largest earthquake ever in Alaska happened. It happened on that day. And what I am here to tell you is, yes, it had something to do with the ringing of that atmosphere.
Thank you, Billy. We're just going to go into a break now. You're on the Postman Show with Billy Hayes and Alana Feynman and Ben Bidgen, care of the www.thevinnieswoodshow.com.